Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Community and Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee, and a special welcome to Wayne Gittings from Housing Plus. Thank you very much, Wayne, for coming along. Thank you. Can you make sure your mobile phones are on silent or switched off, and please, whichever is comfortable with yourselves, but make sure they're not ringing in the meeting. Thank you. Right, the first item on the agenda is the minutes of the 17th of June for me to sign. Is the committee happy with them? Seems a bit lopsided, this, doesn't it? Pardon? I'll get to that in a minute. So, is everybody happy with me to sign the minutes of the last meeting? Thank you. Thank you very much. Apologies, please, Jackie.
Councillors Thorley, substituted by Councillor Loughran, Councillor Jones and Councillor Leeson.
Thank you very much, indeed. Item 3, public questions. There are none. Item 4, councillor sessions. Now, we've had apologies from the Chair of Community of Health from the county, so she's not here this evening. And I would like, if possible, to invite Jeremy, if you'd like to come along, because he was at the health scrutiny from the last meeting, to come along and give a, if you would, very kindly, if you'd like to do that, please.
Yeah,
Councillor Pert, thank you. Just to give a rundown what's happening at the county.
So I was substituting for you at the meeting of the 31st of July.
Yes.
There were two substantive items on the agenda. The first was the NHS savings plan for the Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent Integrated Care Board, and the second related to Queen's Hospital at Burton and where the cardiac cath labs are placed. With your permission, Chair, I won't talk about the Queen's Hospital Burton cath labs because I don't think it's relevant here.
Exactly, you're quite right.
Instead, there was significant discussion and a slide deck in high-level form about the requirement from NHS England for the Integrated Care Board to save approximately £306 million in this financial year so that they can get to a break-even position. The premise of the presentation that was given by the ICB was that there would be no impact on frontline services and on individuals. Some of their savings, and there is a detailed outline of where the savings are coming from. Some of the savings relate to the prescription of different drugs that do the same things. So instead of going with big brand names, going with some of the alternatives. And whilst I can see very clearly that might have an impact, some of those drugs may also have a different impact on the residents taking them. But there were significant numbers of headcount that they were looking at reducing because actually with the health service, the majority does relate to headcount. Most of the cost relates to headcount. And I was quite surprised at the proposals that were put forward, and I think the committee generally was quite surprised by them. And the obvious risk is of cost shunting between the NHS and other system partners, particularly the county council.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for that, Councillor Pert. Has anybody got anything they'd like to ask about them? Or yeah.
Just a Brendan, point if I may. On page 2, the third or fourth paragraph down, it says workforce had increased by 4,897 since 2019.
Whereabouts is it on page?
On page 2, I think.
That one. Oh, thank you.
4,897. Then on page 3, it says total workforce reduction was 1,098. Mm-hmm. I'm just struggling to balance those two out.
But it's something we can take back to county and ask them to qualify it. You know, if can you make a note of that, please, Jackie, so we can pick you up on it. Thank you. Yeah.
Through you, Chair, I think that it's likely that we'll see further presentations from the ICB in terms of what the detailed plans are, because these are very high level, so that they are scoped out fully, and there'll be timelines against them and obviously targets that go with them. But it's a fairly significant saving that is being sought by the ICB.
It's quite worrying, actually, but there you go. Okay, well, thank you very much. There was another meeting taking place, but we haven't got the minutes for that, so I do apologise. I can't even remember what the day it was, to be honest with you. So, but thank you for that, Councillor Pert. That was very informative. Thank you. Right, we'll move on to item 5, members' item, which is nil. Yep, we've got nothing from there. Item 6, we're going to leave that for the end of the meeting because we don't think it's very fair to the Housing Plus to sit through any comments or anything. It'll just drag the meeting out for Wayne's time. So the calling items are going to leave till last, and I'm going to invite Wayne if he'd like to come to the table and give a talk on Housing Plus and how we're moving forward. And the thank you very much. Well, welcome, and thank you for giving your time up to come and meet with us. Before we start, any questions, please leave them while last, okay? And can I also say, please refer to borough issues, not individual issues. If there's any individual issues, then please take it up directly with Housing Plus, not, you know, say, well, this resident said this and she's got a problem. I don't want anything of that. I just want Wayne to have the time to give a rundown on Housing Plus. And then as I say, any questions, we'll refer to the borough as a whole, not as individuals. Thank you.
I've just put together about 3 slides, just because for some of you, well, first of all, my name is Wayne Gethings. I became the Group Chief Executive of the Housing Plus Group on the 6th of January, when we merged 2 organisations together, and I will actually sort of go through that shortly, what that means and why we did it. Oh, it's a lot smaller than I thought it was going to be up there. I was struggling, so
So do you want to move further forward
Fine. So 6th of January, we merged Reaking Housing Group and Housing Plus Group, which were 2 entities together. Now, it was quite a unique merger, because there's lots of mergers going on with housing associations across the country. You've got lots of big national organisations. LQ took or merged with an organisation in Manchester, so that meant you've got London and Manchester sort of trying to sort of manage properties across each other, which you can make your own opinion on whether that works or not. I'm a strong believer in local, and local knowledge plays trumps to people drifting in and out of an area. So what I'm really keen about when we talked about this merger happening is both Reaking and Housing Plus Group covered the same geography. We was already working with the same local authorities. So what's quite unique about this merger is we've just consolidated in the same geography. So what that gives us then is size and capacity to do a lot more across the areas we're currently working in. And we have no ambition to step outside the areas we're currently working in, which is Staffordshire, Shropshire, Telford and Reaking. That's it. So we've got no ambition to go any further at the moment. There's enough for us to be able to do in those areas to both meet our ambition as a growth ambition, as well as get the services better for customers, tenants and service users who are sitting in those places. So it's two objectives for us. So we came together. Before that, for the last 6 years before I became the Group Chief Executive of Housing Plus, I've been the Chief Executive of Housing, Reaking Housing Group. That's my background.
Right.
So been there for 6 years before. and then took over on the 6th to take on the bigger organisation. In essence, what's it mean then? And the map really shows you, we consolidated across, like I say, Staffordshire, Shropshire and Telford Reaking, which is shown there, and I talk about Staffordshire as the whole, but what I've tried to do is collect the number of properties we've got in each part of Staffordshire. But in essence, the big picture is 33,000 homes is now under the management of one organisation, which means 69,000 customers, tenants and service users actually rely on our homes or our care services across the Stafford Borough and other areas we work in. So that's sort of given us sort of quite a large base for us to be able to sort of say, how do we deliver better services across those then? I've got 2,000 staff, 98% of whom live and spend their money in the areas we actually operate. So I haven't got people buzzing in from everywhere. They're part of the economy of Staffordshire, Staffordshire Borough, and the other areas we work. We recruit people locally. I use a lot of procurement from local contractors and local suppliers. Again, I try not to buzz people in. I'm trying to keep the economy right for the areas, and this does give me a better chance to do that. 81% of the homes we've got are what I call general needs. That means them family homes, they're two bedroom, three bedroom, bungalows, flatted accommodation. And then on top of that, I've got some specialist over 55 supported living accommodation. And I've got some extra care schemes as well, which has been a growth area for us over the last few years. And I think the one in Stafford Borough is Elmwood, over where there's a big care village we've built over there, where we've got a dementia centre, we've got an 80 bedroom extra care scheme, along with, I think there's a women's refuge on site, there's also an LD scheme we've got built. We built the whole site there. So that's sort of probably one of the things I mean more specialist housing that we do also operate across Stafford. What does that mean for the local authorities we now operate across? Well, actually for yourselves, 72% of the affordable and social housing that is available in Stafford Borough is now comes to us. We own that property. So we've got quite a big proportion of homes that people in your borough rely on us to provide that home. We turn over about $250 million a year. So that's why I meant the piece about just trying to recruit locally and spend the money locally. So what I'm trying to do is make sure that $250 million comes back into the sort of the local authority areas we work with as much as possible. We've got about a £1.9 billion asset base, and that's the property value. Why is that important? Because I borrow in the private sector against that property base. So the way I fund my business is I use the properties we own to actually go out and sort of borrow money against. So 1.9 billion means I've got the potential to borrow £1.9 billion. At the moment, probably borrowing about £650 million to make it work. So I've got capacity in the business to do more across the borough if the opportunities arise. And as for our credentials around, so what are we doing to meet that sort of carbon neutrality that we're trying to get to by 2050? Well, built into the business plan, the new joint business plan, is both we're going to get to EPCC, that means we'll have no property that's not above a band C or above by 2027, which is 3 years early compared to the 2030 target. So we put money in the business plan to do that, and we then will reach zero carbon quite comfortably by the time of 2050. But I'm not going to speculate when I think we'll get there yet. So I know I can get there 2050, I've got the money to, but we may get there a bit earlier as well. So that's all been built in to the new business plan. We're quite clear, we've got four clear strategic objectives, and we've kept it simple. So in the next 5 years, we're going to concentrate on delivering these four things. Because of the size and where we are, we want to be a place-based leader. We want to be an organisation who's actually operating and getting the benefit out of the size we've got for the people and the local authorities we work in as well. So we intend to sort of work on becoming that place-based leader. We want to do more for residents and communities. What we mean by that is, I'm sure some of you are sitting there and thinking, you could deliver better service than you do now. I know we can. What I'm saying to you is, I've got the capacity, the financial capacity and the ability to recruit to actually start to sort of deliver better services for the customers. I'm going to drive the capacity out of the business. Now, what does that mean, resilience and capacity? Well, I can't deliver better services, and I can't actually start doing more for the communities if I've got no money to do with it. So the idea of bringing two organisations together is to drive out some efficiencies to then spend on services for existing customers and build new and create more social and affordable housing across the board. So that's the resilience and capacity, our third key strategic objective. And the first one is we just want to be a great place to work. We want people to want to work for Housing Plus Group. We want people to say, if I want to work in surveying, IT, housing, then Housing Plus Group is a place I can develop my career. So that's what we're trying to do. They were the four things we've set ourselves. We're just in the process, we're sort of 8 months into the new organisation. We've just moved 3/4 of the housing stock we've got onto one housing management system. Why is that important? Because when somebody rings into Housing Plus Group, I want to be able to say, yes, we know who you are. Yes, we know all about the issues you've got. Yes, we know your debt or rental situation. And yes, we can get somebody out to repair your property quickly because we know all about you. Whereas at the moment, that's sitting on four different systems, or it had been up until the 1st of September. It's now sitting on one system for 3/4 of the property. And Stafford Borough was the first one to come onto that one system. So now the whole of Telford, the whole of Stafford Borough is on one system now. So that means you're going to start to see improvements in people saying, yeah, I am getting through quicker, and yeah, I am receiving services quicker. So hopefully you'll start to see that come out, and that happened after the 1st of September. Have I got another story? Oh, yeah. And the other thing I'm bringing in, which is a complete change for the organisations, and some of you might sit here and say, you're going back to what it used to look like, Wayne, because I'm sure before transfers and before people sort of seeing big organisations. I'm a strong believer in regional structures. Now, what I mean, I don't like functionality. I don't like to have somebody who's a property director who all they're interested in is property-related issues. And then you've got somebody else sitting next to them who's a housing director and all they're interested in is housing-related issues. Well, guess what? Your residents, my tenants, my customers don't see the world that way. They say, I'm living in a house, and whether I've got a noisy neighbour, whether I'm having to deal with a drug problem from somebody down the street, or whether I need a repair done, I need to talk to one person who can deal with it all for me. I'm a strong believer in that works. So what I am doing over the next, between now and the end of March, I'm moving to a regional structure, so I'm getting rid of functionality, and I'm appointing four regional directors, and one of whom will be responsible for Stafford in a region, and will actually have no other distraction other than deal with Stafford, Stafford residents, Stafford tenants, Stafford customers, and they will have a single point of accountability for doing repairs, plan programme, antisocial behaviour, rent, and everything else that goes with those communities. So they're going to become experts in that field. So that's how I'm moving the organisation and moving it away from what I've got now, which is a very functional organisation, which, to be quite honest, I followed a complaint through myself. One of the first things I did when I took over as chief exec, I said, allocate me a complaint and don't let them know it's me as the chief exec who's come to deal with this complaint. So I deliberately used our systems and tried to solve the complaint for a customer. My God, was it difficult, was what I'd say. That's my own organisation. I had to talk to umpteen different people about the same issue and nobody could join it together for me. So I felt if that's what our customers are getting, then it's wrong, which is why I'm now pushing for the regional structure, and we'll have that in by March. I'm probably going to finish there and open it up to questions, really, because I'm clearly talking about a big change to what was probably you've been used to with the old Housing Plus Group. It's now bigger. Mm. It's got a lot more capacity. Mm. I've got the desire to change things. I've got the ambition. I've put a new executive team in who just now starting to sort of work through the organisation. I think by end of this financial year, Mark, you're going to start to feel the changes with what people are talking to you about as people who represent the residents of Stafford.
Thank you very much for that, Wayne. That was very interesting, actually. You know, the first question I've got to ask is, can we have a copy of the slides, please? Thank you, so everybody can absorb it and if there's any queries or anything.
Sorry. And the thing I didn't do, Chair, was the first thing I showed you, was the first thing I also did was got the staff and the tenants, customers and service users, to actually set our new values, the behaviours we should be following. So the very first screen, if you look at it, again, we've tried to keep that dead simple. we actually all come down and says, do you know what? Everybody who works for Housing Plus Group should adopt these behaviours, which is you own it, you look to improve it, and before you introduce anything, live it through the eyes of the person who's receiving the service.
Yeah.
So they were the behaviours we've launched as well, and we did that through the organisation, and there's some training going in with everybody at the moment
on having these
sort of three behaviours.
I've got some more questions, but I'm just one thing I'm going to ask, then I'm going to open it up to the committee. You said about these directors that you're putting in place.
Yeah.
When is that likely to be?
The first two got recruited last week.
Right.
So I've got two out of the four, and we're out now recruiting for the other two positions.
Can you then make sure that the councillors in the borough get the information of who they can speak to directly?
Yeah.
You know, because we don't want to go around the
farmyard,
if you like, trying to get to the right person. So, yeah. I've got some questions, but I'll open it up to the committee now. Yes, Anne. Yeah.
You mentioned that you've got a new system, and obviously we've felt the impact of that because we had a housing list with 2,091 people on, and they're no longer on that list. And we're just wondering, you know, where do they go now? You know, why did you remove them from the list?
Yeah. I think the first thing to probably say is we jointly, both the council and ourselves, had a list of 2,900 people who were 2,900 people who would never got a house by us. We on the area, we turn over about 10%, I've got about 7,200 properties in Stafford Borough. That means at most 700 of those people will be lucky in getting a property with us. The other 2,000 or so would have never got a property. There was just on a list, wishfully hoping for something. They bought a lot, or they thought there was in a lottery that was never going to win. That's what there was. So what I've looked to do is say, I need to be working with the 720 who really need the properties that we're going to get over the next 12 months. And I don't want to work with them saying, oh, look at you, you've never got a house. I want to start working with them while they're waiting for the property. And I want to start working and saying, do you know what it's like to run a house? Have you thought about how you're going to pay your bills? Have you thought about how you're going to furnish it? Have you thought about what good neighbourhood management looks like and what a good tenant looks like? So I'm introducing sustainability by trying to work with people before they even get a property. I couldn't do that with 2,900. I didn't know who the lucky 700 was going to be. What we've got now is out of that 2,900, how many of you might have better numbers than me? 280 have registered on the system. The others, even though we've tried four times, or we've tried different means of getting hold of them, have completely gone off that list. So if they're coming to you, let us know, because they're not coming to me, and what I understand, they're not coming to the council either. So were they just sitting there thinking, well, if I get one, I get one. Did they really need housing, is probably what I'm saying. The council's got a statutory duty to deal with somebody who's statutory called homeless. You've got a full nomination to us, which means we house them straight away. If we've got anything else left, we try and say, is there anybody living in one of our properties unsuitable? So have we got somebody who is condemned to living downstairs because they can't use the stairs? Let's get them into a property that's more suitable for them. That's our next people we'll try and house. Have we got somebody who's living in a family accommodation on their own now who would be better off probably in a bungalow somewhere and probably living in a smaller property to free up that property for the family who could house, who's probably sitting and waiting in temporary accommodation? So it felt painful. I don't think it was. I think for the people who've not come to us, I don't think they needed housing in the first place. And all we've done is we've now got a defined list of people who really do need housing. They've either got a statutory need for housing, or them customers who are coming to us who are already with us and living unsuitably in the properties they're in. And I think that will help with communities as well.
Yeah, how did you decide? What do the lucky 700 look like?
Well, at the moment, the lucky 700 came for statutory homeless, statutory housing people who've got a statutory duty by the council to house. They were the first ones. It's always been the same. So they always got top priority. What you did then is looked and said, is there any left? And there ain't more usually that many left after the statutory duty, to be quite honest. But if there was any left, it was then said, right, who's in it? It looks at the next category of housing need. Who's living downstairs and can't access upstairs? Who is living in a property where it's up some stairs and they can't even get into the property? Now, who's confined to living in a property that's unsuitable? They were the next. So really, we're still dealing with probably the same people we was. What we're not dealing with is 2,200 people ringing us up on a Monday morning saying, how lucky was I ever got a house? Well, the answer's no. That just clogged up the call centre. 700 have been housed. The people we've been doing is working very closely with the local authority now to say, let's make sure we're housing the right ones.
So if we hear from people, do we put them in touch with
And that will be deemed then a statutory duty, which will come straight to us, or it'll be that they've not got a statutory duty owing to them. Can they access other markets? Is the private sector a better place for them to go? So you've got to remember, the properties we rent are socially affordable. They're that way to help people who can't get on the property ladder. We charge 60% of the market rent for a social house and 80% of the market rent for what we call an affordable house. So these are sub-market rented for people who can't access private sector marketing and can't afford to own their own house. So we're trying to deal with those people who are more vulnerable across the board.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Louise, did you want to come in?
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your speech. I'm really pleased to hear that you aim to deliver better services for customers, because I can see that there are a lot of very complex issues that you're dealing with. And to help you to achieve that target, we have quite a proactive community willing to work in a very positive way to help you to achieve that, and we meet regularly each month. Would you please consider joining our community meetings in order to help you achieve your target of achieving better services for customers? That would be incredibly awesome if you would.
I think the reason why
we need to be regularly, because so much information is coming forward.
And I think one of the reasons I want to move to a regional structure is to make sure that I've got not only regional directors, but all the staff are working across that region as well to attend things within the community. Now, that doesn't mean I can attend everything, because there might be something we turn up to and say, you know what, there's nothing we can do here to help. One thing I always do is always be honest. If I feel it's a housing issue that I can get involved with and deal with, then I'll say, yeah, let's get involved. What I'll always do, though, very quickly at the start, is say, do you know what, this issue cannot be solved by a housing provider. It needs a more bigger stakeholder group to solve it. Yeah. So I'll always be open and honest.
The enthusiasm is there to do that. And we're meeting 3 times a month, but once a month to look at this in particular. So it's the last Thursday of every month at 7 o'clock at the Salvation Army. If one of you could be there, that would be incredibly helpful.
I think probably coming in there, probably when this director is in place, this is the person that probably will be. Yeah, so if Wayne can keep us in contact, that would be great. Thank you. Right.
My question is around the turnaround times.
Mm-hmm. Empty properties.
I am aware. I live in one of your big social housing areas. We own our own house, but that next door is one of your properties. The gentleman that moved out, he moved out 12 months ago, and it's only this weekend that we've seen somebody coming in. The gentleman that moved out of there, because it wasn't suitable for him, and they managed to find him somewhere else, waited 9 months to move in to his bungalow, even though it had been empty for 9 months. This property has been empty for 12 months. Somebody came in about six weeks after, ripped up all the floorboards, the new flooring, dumped it outside, didn't see anybody again till about probably a month ago, if it was 3 weeks. So it's about your turnaround time. We know lots of offices that are empty. We've got people screaming down our ears, asking for better housing, and they come through the council as well. So what are you doing to improve?
We've got, it's improving in the last sort of 8 months since we've been working on it. We've got appalling times of turnaround on properties. I'm really shocked to see that some properties are sitting there as long as I've seen them sitting there. I saw it was presented with a list of properties that had sat there for a very long time. We're now proactively working to get that down. How can I give you some assurance that it will come down? Well, there's two things I'll talk about. The first one is, across every organisation I've worked, void properties have taken no more than 20, 25 days to turn out from keys out to keys in. I'm really shocked to see how long we've had properties. So I'm attempting to get that back. It will probably take me 18 months to get there, so I've got a backlog to get through. But my intention is to do two things. Bring the ones back that need bringing back, but I'm going to make some strategic decisions about some of them as well. And I'll pose this to you just to try and give you a bit... Let's try it. Who here passed? Who's passed the driving test? Yeah. Yeah. Leave your hand up if you're still driving the car. You passed your test. You are. You're an enthusiast then. You've got a vintage car. You've got to have it. No. I use that as an example because we have got some property across the borough that's not suitable for putting somebody back in. It's either crappy insulated and we'll never get it up to a position where somebody cannot afford the heating bills in it, or it's actually so isolated that there's not a bus route to it, they can't get into town, things like that. I'm going to make some strategic decisions about them and say, am we best keeping them, or am I best selling that property and building a brand new one in a better place, nearer to the town, nearer to the school, nearer to the hospital, nearer to the doctors. So you will see me taking some strategic decisions on some of the empty properties as well. So, I'm saying it's probably going to be no more than across the whole of the 33,000, it's going to be no more than probably about 200 a year. I'll be saying they're suitable for the future for us. And I'll be looking to move them into the private sector for people to buy. And like some of us may, you own your own house, you take your time to do it, don't you? When you can afford it, you'll do it. For me, I've got to have it lettable, band C, meeting decent homes straight away. That could mean I could spend 40,000-50,000 on a property that somebody will move in and can't afford to the heating bills in, because the insulation is so rubbish and there's nothing I can do to a solid wall property to insulate it. So there's going to be
bearing in mind with that, one of the, because obviously we've been interested in the property next door about people moving in, because obviously we've got a huge call for it where I live anyway. But the electrician came in before, the plasterer came in before the electrician came, so that was wasted, so you have to come back. So you haven't got project, you need a project manager or somebody that can project manage it to bring in the right people, because a lot of them, like you say, they're not your employees that do some of the work. You know, you bring people in locally to coordinate that, because that's wasted, that's probably wasted 2-3 weeks.
It is. I'm not. Do you know what? It's been out of control. It will come into control. It will take me 12, 18 months to get it showing, but you will see properties will turn over between 20 and 25 days. You'll see keys in, keys out. But what you will see is some of the properties which are more isolated, not suitable, you'll start to see them being moved on. But just to give you an example of how I can use that money, I'm just talking to Anna outside. The home ownership market has collapsed. You've probably seen it for 2 or 3 months. I've had 3 spec builders across Stafford Borough area have approached me about standing stock, which was going to go into the owner occupier market. I bought 20 on the Persimmon site, which is, I'm trying to remember the name, I'm really
Burley Fields.
Burley Fields. And I've just purchased another 86 on Fairway. Standing stock wouldn't have been social and affordable housing. It will be, and I'll have them in the next 12 months. But I'm using proceeds from the older properties and moving on. So that's just showing you I can turn one property into a lot more.
Yeah. I think, indeed, this is the sort of thing you need to take up with the director when he's in place. Yeah. Jack?
First quick question, just related to that one. So what's the current turnover rate? Because obviously you're saying you want to have it to 25 to 28 days. So what's the kind of current standard?
Yeah, well, the average, and I hate averages, means that, you know, it means that everybody's not getting received.
Yeah.
Which my average across the Stafford area is 60 days.
Right, okay.
Now, that's rubbish, though, isn't it? Because that means we're turning some over in a year, they'll be turning some over in 4 weeks. If you know what I mean? So, to me, the average is ridiculous. We've got properties that have sat out there for nearly 2 years, which is we should have had properties sitting there for 2 years. They're being bought back in.
That's a great target. So obviously, I look forward to seeing that progress.
You got another one?
Yes. So okay. This is kind of like a bigger question. So how has the merger with the Reakin Group gone? Do you think have we seen like a marked improvement in efficiency and delivery, and such as repairs and etc. Or are you still waiting to kind of see that improvement in efficiency?
I'm starting to see it change now. The first thing is, it's getting people to, exactly what I'm looking at the screen, trying to get all 2,000 people to start believing and acting in a way that's different to what was before. I've seen it. I turned up at, it's not Stafford Borough, I think Penkridge?
South.
Yeah. And it just hit me that when I walked onto Penn Creek, which is one of our sort of extra care schemes there, the sort of site warden who looks after it come to me and says, Wayne, I found it. And it was sort of a bin issue with the county, that one was. Sorted out a bin issue for the residents. He said, I've owned it, I've improved it, I've swapped the bins, I've got the council to swap it. He says, and everybody here is living better because they couldn't reach the top of these big bloody Euro bins before. He says, now they can get the rubbish in them. So that just shows you that I've started to see a language change, which is telling me the cultural change. I've moved all repairs onto one system now. So I'm seeing repairs time speed up. For those people reporting a repair across the borough now, they're getting it within 2 weeks, not 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm starting to see all that start to change as well. It's every day, without one to.
Yeah, no, of course, like I said, I was just kind of interested in, you know, the initial merger's gone, so obviously it's good to see that you are starting to see those, you know, improvements already, and obviously I look forward to seeing further improvements down the line. And then the final one is just, it's great to see that you've moved the date forward for the EPC C scheme, moved it forward by 3 years. Do you know off the top of your head, or obviously I can follow up on this, how many properties you currently have at EPCC and, you know, basically what it is currently?
I can get them to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jack. Angela?
What plans do you have for building more homes? You've talked about having these ones demolished or done away with. I wonder what plans you then have to replace them and actually build in Staffordborough.
Across the area as a whole, we've got the capacity, and I've built into the business plan to build 1,000 brand new homes every year for the next 5 years.
And do you have an idea as to where you're going to build?
Well, at the moment, if I look at the next 2 years, I've got 458 already.
Signed
contracts across Staffordborough.
So these are new ones that you have.
These are brand new sites that
have
got planning approval.
In your pockets to
now? No, the ones I've just said, the 80 odd and the 20 odd that I've just done the purchase on are already on site and built. The others are sites that have got planning permission, of which we are taking probably 20-25% of them as social and affordable housing. But we've already done the contract of the deal, but that'll come to fruition over the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay, right, thank you.
Can I just ask another question, please?
Go on then, Angela, quickly.
What I'm going to ask was that you do have these plans to revamp Rowley Park, which is, you know, a large area, and it's very close to a housing needs area. And I wondered, would your business be interested in coming into that and working with the Borough Council and actually improving the facilities there? Because we're looking at improving the play facilities and providing the area with these play facilities and an amazing park. And I wondered if Housing Plus Group would be able to come in with the Borough Council and help with us in the provision of this.
I think it's twofold. I mean, Rowley Park, we've still got the plan permission in. We're trying to get some plan permission.
He's
across the park.
So,
all right, let's be honest. There's got to be something in for us, hasn't there, as well? We've got to get more houses. We've got to be able to provide more for our customers.
No, it seems as if that is the way of the world.
But it helps you as well, because it helps get people into houses who sit in there, statutory, homeless, or have got a statutory duty to house. The more we can build, the more you can deliver that duty to Borough Council. So, Rowley Park to me has got something interesting, because I want to regenerate some property that borders one side of Rowley Park. So I've already got an interest in Rowley Park and doing something with it. Whether that leads into probably doing more, let's have a look. I don't know. I don't know how near it is or how far it is.
So would you say you would look at it and see if you could make a contribution? And will you take that on board, Anna?
Absolutely. I can speak to the staff and see if somebody can at least understand what the plans are that we're doing and whether or not there's a way that we can work.
And see if we as Housing Plus can come in
absolutely
and be one of the partners with us.
Yeah.
And actually working to provide this facility, because you could become a partner, which would actually be a fantastic achievement for you.
I'll tell you what, you give me planning permission for what I want to do on mine, and I'll come and help you with it.
Okay, can we move on, please? Yes. Okay, Brendan, you wanted to can you make it smaller?
I live in a rural area, like Jack. And sometimes
families or couples are allocated housing association properties in the rural areas when they may have come from, you know, more urban areas,
okay.
sometimes some
okay.
distance away, and they find it difficult to come to terms with living in the rural areas, and the difficulties that you can sometimes have, like you mentioned, public transport. Do you have a priority or a weighing that you allocate people to properties that are from this locality, or is there a scheme where there's just a list and you go down and they could come from Manchester or wherever?
I think, ironically, under the old letting system, there could have been a list of anybody could have applied, and we've got to then make a reason why it was not suitable for the property. I think now we've got the new title letting system, we can be a bit more targeted about one, the need to have a statutory housing need. Two, once we know they've got a statutory housing need, we can start to work with them about where is it you want to live, why do you want to live there, what would it be like for you to live there. So at least we can work with them before they've even got a property to make them understand if it's a rural area they're after, and that's what they want. Do they understand what life would be like for them there, as opposed to something near to the town centre that's got connectivity? So it allows us to have a more tailored approach for people who've decided they want to live in certain areas. Whereas some people are forced into areas regardless.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. You want to come back in again, Anne, quickly?
I was just
yeah.
going to say, I mean, you know, you talked about the 700 that were statutory homeless. I know of two occupiers who were in housing plus houses, not very far away from where I live. And one of them, because of the rents being less, was able to save up and go on to buy her own home, well, her and her husband. And also another woman that lived in Hesketh Road, she saved up. They're both working, all of them working. They saved up. And you've got that social mobility then. And that opportunity isn't so easily come by if you're renting privately. You know, have you got capacity for taking working people as well?
Well, what does success look like for me? I'm a housing association. That means I'm a registered provider, which is I'm serving the needs of people who can't access the housing market. That's what I'm in, and therefore, I'm not in the game of selling houses for the highest price. I'm in the game for saying, let's find the people who need to actually move into a property because they're in a situation where they can't access it. However, a success for me is somebody who will move in, find employment, look to improve themselves, and then actually moving out away from me into that one house is a success story for them. Because if they still rely on me, it means we've failed, not only me as an organisation, but society may have failed as well. So I don't want that to be broad brush, because we've got some people who, you know, they are way of a council house. I'm a child of a council house, so I know sort of thing. My mum and dad at one point, that was the world for them. They wouldn't have lived anywhere else. But a success for me is somebody who does become economically active, a good person in the community, or a good deliverer in the community, works, and then goes going to buy the house. Sometimes that's success, isn't it?
So have you got capacity to house
people
like that?
We do prodigal shared ownership. So some of the properties we'll provide is, because again, they might not be able to afford it all. So what I actually do is, so I've got a property here where you can buy a percentage, 25%. So you're putting equity into the property, so you're gaining off the property value, and you rent the other 75% of that. And then you can staircase out until finally you can buy 100%. Once I've got that money, I can go and buy a new one and start again by renting it out to somebody else. So there is.
There's people on low income that can't find those deposits, that haven't got equity, and that, you know, renting privately is very expensive.
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of people need opportunity as well, don't they?
Do you want to come in, Anna?
I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I think that's more of an issue around the housing market itself at the moment than the cost of private renting. I accept it is really, really expensive and it is very, very difficult to save for a house. I think the challenge that we've got is the social and affordable stock is limited and we absolutely have to prioritise those who can't afford any other option. So that is very much where we are at the moment. In an ideal world, we would have so much more social housing where people would be able to get on into that property and then onto the ladder as soon as possible.
that's not where we are at the moment. So however much we'd love that, we really can't have that luxury, which is why we are looking at other projects like shared ownership as well, see as an alternative to that.
Thank you very much. You know, and okay, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Wayne, and it sounds as if you've got loads of money and you want to spend it. That's the impression I'm getting. That's the impression I'm getting from you, you know. So, and it's really good to see that you're looking after the elderly. You know, you're building accommodation for the. What about the disabled people where they need the really big, you know, I'm thinking about people in wheelchairs that want to be able to live on their own and be able to use a wheelchair in their own home. I know we've got some facilities in Stafford, but do you plan on building any more capacity for that, for these people?
What we always
you know, because
we
need a wide doorway, don't they?
What we always tend to do is, if it's a landlady, or when we buy landladies, we buy the land, and then we look to actually put properties on. We'll then always come to the Borough Council and say, have you got an unmet need for socially affordable? And then usually, in fact, people who probably went through disabled facility grant, who would say, do you know what, it would be better to build them a proper property with wider doors. So we will then build them to a new development. It's hard to change an existing house, isn't it? Houses are hard to change. We do so. So yes is the answer.
Thank you very much. And the other question I've got really is, and I know we've got a problem, and Anna will probably shout me down on this, but children in care, leaving care. Leaving care. You know, and we have a problem. We've got the biggest number of children in Stafford in care. And when they leave care, you know, you've said about helping people and looking after them, you know, working their bills out and things like that. Is there something that you can help the borough with, and Anna and you working together, so we can find properties for these children to be able to move into? So they,
I'm
putting my county councillor hat on as well, and thinking about the children that,
I think, do you know what? It's a conversation indeed, because there's a fundamental issue that starts. Somebody comes out of care before they can take a tenancy with us. Mm-hmm. So there's a 2-year, maybe 3-year gap where actually legally they can't take a tenancy with us. They need a guarantor or need some form of sub guarantee behind it before they can even legally take one of our tenancies. You know, there is ways of doing it, but it does mean somebody's got to put their hand in their pocket somewhere to put a guarantee behind those for the first few years of a tenancy. And the tenancy would probably have to go into the name of the person who's funding those first few years, which does mean it becomes a financial burden to some organisation that sometimes does fall to either borough councils or county councils.
So there's a
legally, I cannot give somebody a tenancy until they become 18 plus. I cannot give anybody below that a tenancy.
It's just something that, you know. Yes, Anna.
I think we have a lot of success in housing care leavers, in social housing. I think the critical thing is understanding who they are at an early stage when they're likely to be.
I appreciate
care,
that.
So that we can start that journey that Wayne's been talking about, and preparing people for a tenancy as early as possible, so that actually when they do turn 18, they are able to run a house, understand about bills and everything like that. I think the point that you're possibly picking up on in particular is around those care leaders who've got significant support needs and need the other agencies as well to provide that care and support that, you know, will make it able for them to then successfully hold a tenancy. And I think that is where we really need to be looking at those external support agencies about what they can do as well as just housing providers and the council as well.
Well, thank you very much for that. Wayne, thank you so much. We've taken you an hour of your time, and I'd really do, I think the committee appreciates it as well. So thank you for coming along, and but please remember, we need the names of these directors, that, especially the ones for Stafford. And thank you very much, Anna, you know, for supporting Wayne as well with the questions and that. So thank you so much, and probably we'll see you in probably 12 months' time, 6 months' time, or whenever. Okay.
Thank you
very much indeed. Safe journey home. Thank you. Right, we move on to item 7B now, which is this Disabled Facilities Grant. And welcome, Samantha, Sam, for giving our presentation, and then we'll take questions after. Thank you.
you. Thank you for having me. I'm Sam Taylor. I'm sure I've met many of you before and presented
yes.
to you before on DFG, so hopefully a somewhat familiar face. Last time I was here, I was talking about the first year of our in-house disabled facilities grant service. So this is an update on that. We've now completed 2 full years where we were previously outsourced to a third-party supplier. So this is a sort of 2-year update and performance from 2024-25. Just a quick reminder for context, Stafford hosts a DFG service that is shared between Stafford and South Staffordshire districts. So we have a large team that supplies that service across both borough and district areas. It's a partnership that actually continues to work really well. I'm sure there'll be examples of where that's working well as I go through the presentation. So I'll just go back a little bit. I apologise if you've heard this before, but just for context and a reminder, disabled facilities grants are a statutory duty of the Borough Council. It's a mandatory provision for chronically sick and disabled people. We adapt their homes to make the environment safer and to take away any barriers that might be prohibiting their safe access to essential facilities. So there are clear purposes for the grant that are set out in the legislation. And there is also a further regulatory reform order on top of the Housing Act, which enables us to put in place a local policy. So it gives us wider powers to be able to offer discretionary assistance over and above what's in the core DFG legislation. And we do have a policy in place, and that was updated last year in 2024. Most commonly, you'll probably recognise, we do bathroom alterations, level access showers, stair lifts, ramps. The maximum grant's £30,000. It is a means-tested grant, so it's subject to a financial test of the applicant's resources. It's available to any tenure, because you can own your property, rent it privately, rent it from Wayne if you like, and we'll still be able to do a DFG. And it's a ring-fenced capital allocation that we get every year from government, and it comes down through the County Council through the Better Care Fund, so that's the passported route through which we receive our grant. Local context, there's a significant need for DFG. I'm sure you're all aware of an ageing population. We've got fewer working age adults to pension age adults as we age as a population. So we have a ratio of dependency where more and more people are dependent on people who are of working age. So there's a lot of stress on working age adults, carers, health and care services, as I'm sure you know. And we have an increase in life expectancy, but a growing gap between our healthy life expectancy and the age at which we would expect to live to. And so we don't have as many years in good health as we perhaps should, which makes our home environment even more important to us to be a safe space that we can access all the essential facilities. We have a high proportion of people in the borough with limiting and long-term conditions and disability, people claiming disability benefits. And we also have a lot of lone pensioner households. So I'm sure you can imagine it's difficult enough having a health condition, worse doing it by yourself behind closed doors. Obviously we've got a lot of demand for suitable housing, which obviously Wayne's beautifully led me in tonight with a good introduction on some of the challenges around that. And it's not as easy as to think, well, when I get older and when I start to struggle and when my knees and my hips go, I'll just move into a bungalow. It's just not that straightforward for people. So there's a real need for DFG. And our annual allocations of funding have been increasing in recent years. I think that is recognition of the need and demand. And for the last couple of years, we've not only had a higher allocation than previously, but then a subsequent top-up. So the challenge for the team in delivering services is that you get 3/4 of the way through the year and you think you're doing really well and you're using all the allocation and making best use of that resource, and then a chunk more money comes in. And so then we have to pick the pace up again to deliver even more and make use of that funding and not let it sit doing nothing. Last year's budget was £1.88 million, so it's a lot of money to spend. Going back a little bit, just to remind you, you know, it was outsourced for many years, and the last 5 years before we brought the service back in-house was with one particular provider where we shared a contract with other districts and boroughs in the county. And what you can see on this chart is the total height of the column is the amount of budget that we were allocated by government in each year, and the blue shaded area was how much was spent by our provider. So they weren't really making use of what budget we had available, which obviously meant that we were not able to help as many people as we had resources to. The Borough Council had used contracted home improvement agencies for a long time, and there was a place for them. But we recognised that despite lots of effort in managing that contract, working with that provider, doing everything we and they could, you know, it wasn't good enough. So we brought it back in-house. We share with South Staffs. We have a team of 8 people. We do everything from receiving the first inquiry through to appointing building contractors. We don't have plumbers, carpenters and electricians. They are outsourced. And we don't let that customer go until we've got absolute clarity that they were 100% happy with the adaptation that they've received and that they can go on and live there happily. So that service delivery change, that's now 7 years worth of bar charts, and you can see quite clearly what we've done in the last 2 years. Coming in at 97% of our budget last year, which was really annoying because that includes the top up that we received in the autumn. So I'm not going to say no to extra money, but if we hadn't had it, that would have been over 100. I'm just going to leave that there. It's been well spent. This is not a case of, oh, well, the budget's going, but we're still helping the same number of people. We used to target between 85 and 100 people a year to help receive a grant, and last year it was 210 residents received an adaptation. The other thing that's really important to us, as well as spending the budget and helping lots of people, is doing it quickly. So end-to-end times are really important. That is the graph from the previous 5 years outsourced, and this is the trajectory now with the last couple of years added on. So there was a spike, take that, in 23-24. Obviously, at that point, we just brought it in-house. We were recruiting, we were training, we had a computer system to set up. We inherited an enormous backlog. And I think in quarter one, what we did was complete the stuff that was quick and easy to do. And by quarter two, you see us start to get into the depths of those really complex cases that have been waiting for a long time. And every time we complete a case that has been with our predecessor for a number of years, that's dragging our average up. That's why averages aren't always great. But overall, I keep an eye on that average, and you can see it starting to go the way that we want it to. We've cleared those older, more complex cases, and we're pushing now to make sure that all people who come to us are new. And I'm happy to say that everybody that's in our system now has arrived as one of our customers and not the previous supplier, that we're turning those around much more quickly. So our service aims, we set them out, and the team are all aware of these, and they're reflected in their objectives and in their personal reviews. We have a vision for the service, and having close control over the delivery of DFGs by doing it in-house means that we can live and breathe the aims and priorities that we're setting. We offer a lot of added value to residents that I don't quantify here. So if one of the team recognises that someone has an underlying entitlement to a benefit, they're going to jump on that. They're going to make sure that they know, they're going to support them to apply for those benefits. Sometimes that eradicates the means test. That's great for us, it's great for them. We do look at wider housing needs. We do talk to people about a range of options. If their home is entirely unsuitable and they are not comfortable there, then we will support them if they're thinking they would prefer to move rather than adapt. We help people who don't want our help. We help people who want a grant but don't actually want us to handhold them through everything. They just want the forms to fill in and they want to get their own builder and their own quotes. That's fine too. Sometimes it's quicker for them to get things that way if they're already part way there. And we've got discretionary funding through the policy that I mentioned earlier, which allows us to help people in real life circumstances. So we can make home working spaces accessible for disabled people. A lot of us can work at home now. Why shouldn't a disabled person, if it just means moving some electrical sockets to a height they can reach? We can do that, changing the lighting, making a doorway into a room that was previously unused wider so they can get in. We'll do that. We support second homes for disabled children with separated parents. Why should they only have one home adopted when they're seeing mum and dad? People who are providing foster care or respite placements, they can apply for DFG under a discretionary grant with us. We try and make sure that all of the design work that we do for people is sustainable. We look into the future. We don't want to come back and adopt again. They don't want builders in their house again. We add extended warranties wherever the funding will allow. So that means that they can keep getting those services done on equipment and things. and we just strive for quality products, quality workmanship, quality installers. We don't always get it right, sometimes some contractors let you down, but we keep on top of that by managing that quality and monitoring a lot of feedback that we get. These are our performance highlights for last year. I think I probably touched on most of them. The second point is about how many grants we've approved the application for but not finished the work at the end of the year. Having 68 at that point is really good for me because it shows that we've got a constant throughput of work at all stages. We don't have stop and start over the year. So those 68 would have come straight into quarter one and actually been built. I've mentioned there about the average end-to-end times. So our overall end-to-end time, which is what you saw on the bottom of that graph before, is 275 days. But if I remove any outliers from that average, which were people who came to us from the previous contracted supplier, our own average end-to-end time is 235 days. That's what my team have touched from start to finish and had no other input from other parties on. It's customer satisfaction. So we measure both satisfaction and personal outcomes. Satisfaction is your typical stuff. What did you think of your contractor? How did we help you with your application? Did we explain it well? Did you get all the information and options that you needed? Personal outcomes is about asking residents to give us a view of how strongly they agree or disagree with some statements about their lives. We ask them, are you reliant on carers or family support for your daily activities? Are you able to live independently in your home? Do you feel confident in your home? Do you feel that you're at risk of falling? Do you know what help you can get? And we ask them to kind of rate themselves with a number. And then at the end of the process, we allow them to kind of live with their adaptation for 2 or 3 months before we bring them back and ask them to rate themselves again. We don't have a huge number of take-up people wanting to answer our questions once it's all done and dusted, but some people will. And those outcome scores always go up. Always. There's always an improvement. Even if it's only very small, it always moves in an upward position. So we measure that from both points of view. That's just to show you the team. A team that I'm really proud to work with. They're all brilliant people. Everybody there has either been with us from the start or were recruited in within the first 6 to 12 months. We haven't had any turnover in the team, just anyone that's joined us stayed with us. We only had 2 people in the team who had prior knowledge of DFG before we started the service. Everyone else has come from different backgrounds and they've had to learn it on the job. So done an awful lot of training, induction, continuous development over the last couple of years. In the last year, one of our technical officers was previously a junior technical officer and he's been promoted and he's completing an HNC on a funded apprenticeship in construction. So obviously really, really proud of that. This year all the team members will undergo further training to enable them to become a trusted assessor. And I'll talk about that a bit more later and why. The DFG capital budget covers the cost of all grant-related service delivery, so the council isn't putting any revenue into this. This is all paid for from the capital grant. The lead officer position is currently vacant, but I've got recruitment underway that's closing on the 5th of October. One of the drivers for bringing it back in-house was financial. We were paying the previous contracted provider a fee on all grants that they completed. Mm-hmm. So, considering the fee that we paid them and having done a benchmarking exercise on what it cost up and down the country for similar services, we pitched that we would want to make sure that our staffing costs were between 16 and 21%, but never more than 21% of our budget. 24-25, the cost was 8%.
Wow.
So we've always run below the fee level that we paid a previous provider. We do have a lot of partners that we rely on and work closely with. So obviously I've mentioned 2 councils there. Homes Plus actually take referrals from us for their own residents. So if someone comes and needs adaptations, we will give them the opportunity to work with their own housing provider. So the landlord will take the OT recommendations for that person and they will come up with a design, they will get quotes from contractors, and then they will send that back to us to approve the grant and we pay for it at the end and we check a sample of their work to make sure that we're happy with it. What that has led to is so much additional value that we couldn't have actually predicted. because they will do a lot of minor works without coming and applying for the grant. They just get stuff done. They'll straighten out paths, paving slabs, put an extra rail up, do a little bit of electrical work, lighting, change door locks. They do a lot on minor works for us. We try and quantify it each year, but we rely on their information to be able to do that. In the first year, I can tell you, they saved us around £13,000 just by doing minor works themselves for their own residents, for their benefit. The County Council continues to provide front door service, so we ask everybody that would like to apply for DFG to call them first. It means they can have a holistic triage. If they would be better off with a small piece of equipment, or maybe they need to see an OT to talk about therapies and different ways to solve the problems that they're facing, it doesn't automatically have to be a change in the bricks and mortar. It could be something to do with the way that they cope with their disability and their challenges. So the County Council do that first, and then they refer onto us when we're fairly sure that it is an adaptation that's going to be needed. Obviously, Stafford and Cannock share services. That's always interesting to explain to people when I tell them how this shared service with South Caps works. I, in the shared service arrangement, I manage Cannock's DFG team. So they brought theirs back in-house at an earlier point. They were further ahead than us. We've aligned a lot of systems and processes with them. We've really just tried to ensure that any decisions we take now don't ultimately preclude Cannock staff and South staff all working together, or any combination of councils you might like to back. I don't mind. Mm-hmm. It does increase our resilience, and it does share efficiencies just having those councils working closely together. And one really good example that I like to tell people is contractors. We had a great contractor do a brilliant bathroom job for us, and we said to him, well, how can we get you coming and, you know, tendering for more of the work? Well, I'm Wolverhampton based, and it's not really worth my while bringing my guys all the way up there. And I said, well, you know, what if you could bid for work that was Stafford, South Staff, and Cannock? Well, yeah, I'd send teams of guys up there all week long, and we'd do, you know, loads of bathrooms for you. And we onboarded a really good contractor because we could say, look, we've got these relationships, and there'll be more work for you. And obviously, the other districts and boroughs, you know, we're all delivering GFG. We do it slightly differently to each other sometimes, but I lead a district leads group. I chair that group. We get together a couple of times a year, just compare notes on some of the key issues that are affecting us all, and learn and share from that. So looking forward a little bit, service demand's going up. So that chart just shows you a general sort of trajectory of the number of referrals that we receive in each quarter. So we are geared up to make sure that we can continue delivering at the rate that we have been. I realise that's really, really small, so I'll perhaps share these for you so you can read some of the resident feedback rather than lingering on that. And then our continuous improvements. So I mentioned before about trusted assessor training. One of the challenges we've faced actually is occupational therapy assessments. We procured a provider who said to us, you know, there's a lot of challenges in recruiting OTs. There is a national shortage of them. It's just a difficult profession, I think, to get good people. We're very, very fortunate with the OTs that we have working in our patch. But our provider had a serious cyber incident and then very recently went into liquidation. So it leaves us with a single point of failure around OTs, because until we can get their recommendations for what someone needs, and all of the detailed understanding they can give us to help specify the adaptation, we can't really do very, very much. And we'd recognised this a long time before I knew they were going to go into liquidation. And so we'd planned to have our team members trained as trusted assessors, which means people with simple, non-complex conditions, we will have the skill set to be able to go in and assess their needs and then spec and design their adaptations for them. People with complex conditions will still need to go to an OT, don't get me wrong, but this builds resilience, and it should bring about a cost saving because the OT service wasn't cheap either. So we will reduce the number of people that have to go to OT, though there will still be a number that need to go there. Contractor selection, yeah, we continually monitor our contractors. When we first came in-house, we brought a small number that had recognised that the work was going to move, and they did a lot of DFG work. And it was a risk position because if they didn't do a good job, we didn't have many other places we could get quotes from. We've tripled the number of contractors on the panel. We've kicked some off and we've brought some new ones on. So we'll just, that's under review all the time, you know, that's a continuous thing that we do to make sure that we've got the best quality workmanship. The team are working on producing more leaflets, guides and documents. We found that people really like the visual. We really want to show people some of the quality we can produce. You don't have to have a hospital looking bathroom. You don't have to have horrible, ugly white rails. There are other things that we can offer. So they're trying to produce some kind of glossy images just to help people see what the art of the possible is and not be put off by having a council adaptation. And all of our resources, all of our standards and best practice is always under review, whether that's from a management position or actually the team. The team will bring through their team meetings, their suggestions, and go to roadshows and meet with suppliers to try and stay on top of the sort of the latest things. That's it.
Well, thank you very much for that, Samantha. Really interesting. You know, it's good we've got that money to be able to help people, isn't it? And is there anybody got any questions? I'm looking at all blank faces. Yes, Louise.
I've been contacted by quite a lot of disabled people who, between now and maybe the last 6 months, haven't been expected to pay council tax before, but now are, and the rates aren't standardised. So some people might be paying the full amount, some people might be paying £30, and it seems to be different from area to area. And considering that in 2010 that group were particularly vulnerable and now we've had a cost of living crisis, I just wondered if you could give me any background information from that, because the information isn't the same across the board, if that makes sense.
I'm really sorry, Councillor, that's not my area of expertise in council tax. I can't offer you an answer, but I can take the question away.
I'm going to say it's not a disabled grant question, is it? It's something you need someone to be asking.
Yeah, definitely.
So nobody's got any questions. I mean, what's your main problem that, you know, what's your main...
At the moment, my biggest problem is my OT supplier going into liquidation. that was a blow. The procurement was a significant piece of work and we should have had them in place on framework for 4 years, so you know we're 2 and a bit years into that, and the company, it was a big company that had a lot of London-based contracts providing equipment, and that was their downfall. Actually, right. The part of the business that did occupational therapy assessments, yeah. Outsourced assessments, was actually very profitable, but a small part, and so we are collateral damage in a bigger.
Okay, right. Well, thank you both, and thank you, Anna.
Chairman,
you know.
I wonder if I could just say, I'm sorry to.
Yes, Jill.
It's a great testament to Anna and Sam and the team that they actually have kept all the members of the team. It's when I say it's a great testament, the fact that you don't lose your members. Mm-hmm. They want to stay with you. They want to be trained. You know, how many departments can actually boast that? Mm. I think it's incredible. And congratulations, Sam.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for the good work that you do, Sam and Hannah as well. So thank you, and thank you for your presentation. And can we have a copy of the slides, please?
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Right, we'll move on now to the performance report, 7C. Yep. And I'm going to take it page by page, and if anybody's got any queries or questions, please put your hand up. Okay? Right, so we're on page 38. 28. My apologies. Page 29. Page 30. 31. Everybody looking at it? Page 32. So glad to see we've got a new tree man in place, have we not, Josh? Is that correct? New tree officer, yeah. So thank you for that. Yeah, that's on page 32, and I see some. There's lots of trees Lee looking at, as we know. Yeah, thank you. Page 33.
I've got one there, Chair, if I may.
Yeah.
On
preparation of cabinet reports to identify section 106 and other capital funding, etc. We were promised on several occasions that we would be getting quarterly or half-yearly reports on section 106 money, where it had been spent, on what and how much, and what funds might be still outstanding in those wards.
Thank you for raising that, Brendan, because that's one thing I was wondering as well. So anybody, one of the officers can answer that.
Can you just point me to which element which page it's on?
So page 33, investment in parks, play areas and open spaces.
Yeah.
Right.
Prepare cabinet reports to identify section 106.
Okay.
I think it's the small play areas that we're, you know, wondering what's happening with those.
Yeah, I think your question was related to the wider section 106 spend, is that correct? Because that would be going to the Economic Development and Planning Scrutiny Committee as opposed to this one. Josh, I don't know if anything to say about.
Yeah, please come to the table, Josh. Yeah.
There is a report that's actually on its way. It's going to Cabinet briefing, I believe, on Monday at the North Cabinet around the next, I think, four or five play areas that we're looking to add at the top 11. So that will be the section 106. But I don't think, to be honest with you, we've off the top of my head, in those particular areas, the wards that we're looking at doing the work in, there is any section 106 available. The other section 106 report is going to be filmed with, I believe, by Dean and the finance team. I think that's the one you're referring to. I think we're working with finance on doing that.
It's specifically about giving ward councillors some information about what funds might be available in their ward.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That have been received and what it can be used for. And those are the reports I think we're expecting to receive.
Yes. I know Dean, I had a conversation with Dean, I think only this week, about the section 106 report, the section 106 group we've got that runs. I think the difficulty with section 106 is quite often it gets tied up in other things. So, for example, Anna's got loads of money, I always do this to Anna, she's got loads of money to build a new swimming pool, which I really don't think Anna really wants a new swimming pool particularly, but that's the way the section 106 cookie crumbles pretty much. But I know Dean is working on that before.
Thank you
very much. Yeah. Anybody else? Just how much is Rowley Park costing? What are we spending on Rowley Park?
Well, how much do you want to spend on Rowley Park?
as much as we can spare.
The master plan, which I think is around about £4.2 million. But the beauty of having a master plan is the fact that you've got plenty to go at over the next few years. I think at the minute we've got probably £600,000-£700,000 in the bank that we can use for it, and I think there's another report coming that's asking for some more permission. So there's another report coming on the master plan for Rowley Park going forward, and we're in the second level of consultation, and that consultation has gone really, really well on Rowley Park.
Right, okay, so we'll wait and see what the outcome
is
on that.
We tend to phase them. So there'll be phase one, which we've got the money for, which will potentially be the play area.
Yeah.
And we've done quite an ambitious, and Sam's on the team on the Rowley Park project board, as we can say, got quite an ambitious plan, probably split over three or four phases across the whole park.
Right.
We'll hear more about that in due course.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Okay. So we move on to page 34. Page 35. All blank faces. Page 36. Brendan.
The health and well-being total value of financial outcomes achieved as a result of the citizens' advice contract. £4,797,000. How is that measured?
So that was, obviously, last financial year. That was around the value of debt that they addressed. Some of it was written off, and also income maximisation, so how many more benefits people could apply for to be able to help them to manage better. So a total of all of that, with debt written off and income maximisation, it came to that amount.
And is that fed through your chair?
Yeah.
Is that fed from the CAB?
It is, yes. We've got a contract with them. We do quarterly monitoring of that contract. It's lots more details, well, obviously, people
been helped, where they come from, what the main issues are, things like that. So there's a lot of detail because it's really exciting to have people managing at the moment.
Sounds great.
Thank you very much. Page 37. Page 38. Yes, Louise.
I just want to say thank you to Street Scene because we've had a massively huge increase in their needs recently, and they've done an incredible job of keeping on top of some significant problems. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Yes, it's quite interesting actually, is that Street Scene and the resident satisfaction appearance of town centres, and very good. Yeah. Any queries? Any problems? No? No? And talking about the town centre, I just want to mention that beautiful shop we've got now in the town. Have you been to the cake shop?
Yes.
Has everybody been to the cake shop?
I bought bread.
I mean, it's absolutely, that's the sort of thing we need, isn't it, in the town centre? You know, those lovely little shops that's a bit like Mini Chester. I've always said that Stafford should be like a Mini Chester. Yeah, and I think, see the queue outside that shop, I couldn't believe it. Absolutely unbelievable. But there you go. So you're quite happy with the, thank you very much. Okay, so, right. We now move on to item six, the called in item, the events policy. Yeah? Yeah, yeah, okay. Councillor Pert, do you want to come to the table? Because you've called it in as well. Okay. I mean, I'll ask one question. I mean, before we start, then I'll open it up to Louise and Jeremy. This events policy, does it apply to all events? You know, small town events, small community events. Have they got to adhere to this policy? Or is there something that, you know, I'm thinking about scouts and people like that and girl guides when they do small events and what have you. I'm really worried that it might put people off if you turn around to them and say, you've got to follow this policy or else you can't do your function. So,
Chair, if it's on our land, then yes, it will. So this applies to anyone that wants to hold an event on our land, so either in Market Square or on one of our parks, it is where it's targeted at.
Okay. And do you feel that we've involved the public out there, the businesses out there and that enough? You know, I worry that, you know, in years gone by, I don't think we do enough for the children. I mean, all right, we've got. And a lot of the functions we do are very formal. You know, the mayor's events and things like that, fine, okay. But I still don't think we make enough like of... when we do the Crown Court opening. I think that's a fantastic event, but we never advertise it. We never make a big show of it. And yet there's a lot of people. You see people standing there thinking, what's going off? You know, and yet it's part of our heritage. You know, it's... And again, the Christmas lights, absolutely fantastic. You know, doing a brilliant job. But again, we used to have the Christmas parade. You know, we've got all the businesses involved and really, really, and that was for the children and the young people, shall we say. We don't do that now. And I know that, so I worry that we get the people out there, the businesses, the people that can do some events and that and involving them more. That's my concern.
The events policy itself, all that is aiming to do is just set out a framework of our requirements around events and event management and event safety. It's on the back of Martin's Law that's recently introduced for larger events. Mm. So certainly not trying to put anyone off with it.
Mm.
And also, it's to give, we've got a limited office of resource that looks after events now in the borough, and it's to be able to give them enough time and people want to organise events so they know what the process is and how much time they need to leave the events, because
one of the main concerns that we have with local authorities and the borough is not on its own. We have the same issues with Cannock Chase, and the colleagues across other authorities I've spoken to have the same problem. People will drop an event on you with 3 weeks' notice and expect to be able to do an event in your park. Or they want to say, right, I want to play Westbury Park, for example, in 2 or 3 weeks' time. And we don't often have time to then consult the local parish council, the local town council, say, what have you got details on that may potentially impact against that event, or that event may impact on your event you've got the weekend after. For example, a food festival, or Stone Creek Club will do a festival. Things that will come in that may clash against each other. And also, we've got a requirement, we have a duty of care as local authority and as events, owners of event spaces, shall we say. We have a duty of care to make sure the events that we allow on our land are safe and secure for the people that go to them. So it's to give us that little bit of extra time and to set that out in front, because not everyone understands it, so we put this together. Even when we were talking about doing this, probably as long as I've been involved in the borough, so probably the last 3 or 4 years, we've been looking to try and get this event policy off. What's happened to it, it's grown, to be honest with you, from where it started. Martine started the original work on the events policy when she was with the other scrutiny, looking at economic development scrutiny and trying to develop the events a little bit further, and we then started to set the framework in place.
I think, yeah, Martine Manning and Craig, you know, doing a good job on that, you know. It's like we used to do the community awards. We don't do that any longer. I know there's a cost involved, but at the end of the day, it was a lovely night. We got the people from all the areas in the borough involved in that, and it was really, really good. But we don't do it anymore, and it's quite, yeah. Jeremy, do you want to come in?
Thank you, Sham. I'm more than happy to let committee members go first, and then.
Yeah. Does anybody want any comments? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Friend.
I think it's a very useful guide. Having organised several dozen events over the years, and having to have road closure orders and tens and what have you, licences, it seems like sometimes, crikey, I've forgotten what we did last year. We do it all over again. This is a useful guide for not just on council, Stafford Borough Council owned property, but also for anyone organising an event in their locality, in their village green, or wherever it might be. So I think it's very useful. Yeah, it can be a little bit, well, crikey, that looks like hard work. But if it keeps you on the right side of the law, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yes.
I would echo, actually, the same comments. There's nothing in here that you weren't already, shouldn't have already been doing this, so it just lays it out. I know I was on the economic development when we asked for something, because we wanted to promote Stafford and we didn't know where to go. And I know the other side of it, but there isn't anything, is there, in here that wasn't there?
Through you, Chair. It was a bit of a mammoth undertaking, to be honest with you. I didn't start it, although it did land in my lap at some point. I'll be honest, when we started talking about it, it was going to be a few pages. And I said, you'll never do it in a few pages. And then Martine took it away and started it. And then we ended up with, we had a meeting here with probably getting on for 18, 20 officers around the table, all got that involvement in events. And Greg chaired the meeting. And we started talking about it. And then we've got Corrine, who's come from Sandwell, and her role at Sandwell was the events officer for Sandwell, and they did some massive events over there. And then Corrine had a big input into it as well. So it morphed into something that was quite huge. It is not designed by any stretch of the imagination to put anybody off doing events.
Well, that's what I was worried about, yeah.
And if it does, we will try and support them through that. I have got half a post that looks after events, but we share that, so that half a technical post that's there, which is the markets and events office we've got, the work that's in there is shared between myself, Anna's team, and Corrine and Sam, and Lee with the parks, and Tony Dale, so we'll all look at it, and at the minute on signing off events with Martin and Kate and myself, because Craig's unfortunately he's on leave at the moment. So we're doing it between us. So there's a big team behind it that we're trying to sort of reach, but we're not. It's not designed for anybody off events. And again, I think with Lorraine Conkey, with a lot of the events that she does, you know, it was quite refreshing that when Kareem came here, she said that LR events are really, really well thought of and well sought after by other authorities. So we're quite lucky to have her, and that was sort of a different take, you know. But yeah, so generally speaking, it's, well, not generally speaking, it is not meant to put anyone off doing holding events. It's there to set out, as we said, set out what the requirements are and give people a bit more background and detail, and it is a much bigger document than I ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it could be overwhelming for some people, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I was thinking, would it be useful to have a sort of tick list with it that links back into the document?
There is a checklist online, so when you go to online links, there's quite, Martin's done a great
Thanks,
job.
Brendan.
Putting quite a bit online for us. So
yeah,
the links in there.
Link back in.
And the links. Well, when it came out, the links all worked, because I checked them, because that's one of my pet hates. They did work, I'll be honest with you, and they should still work now. But yeah, there are links to check this and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank
you very much. Thanks, Brendan.
And
yeah.
I noticed it's on the front. On the front of the borough now, how to book, which is brilliant. And it leads to this, or it will lead to this, and then it will lead to the checklist. Brilliant.
Thank you very much. Louise?
Yeah, our community and businesses want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there are overall questions around toilets, risk assessments, processes and overall guidance to make things successful. So who would we approach for that, please?
Well, in the first instance, it'd probably be Kate. She's the events officer, so she can signpost them to where to look.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got, obviously, got the support. It depends on the size of the event. What we have to remember is the borough, all of your large events are contracted out to Freedom. The Freedom Leisure through.
This would be a community-led business.
Yeah, so community event, if they want to do something on our land, so again, if it's in one of our parks or in Market Square, then Kate's the first one.
And is there a fee for that?
For that advice?
To create the event, is there a fee?
If they want to come in, there's a fee for hiring the space. So there's an event hire space fee, which is in fees and charges for the parks, and it's a nominal fee for the parks, and it just covers the damage and things like that. We ask people to sign a waiver, etc. But we will require them to do a risk assessment and an event management plan. And it all depends upon the size of the event.
And would that include toilets as part of that? Or
no,
is that something
no.
You need
if it's an event, if they need additional toileting on the site, we expect that to come in with the event management plan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same as waste and all sorts of things like that.
Jeremy.
Thank you, Chair. I guess my concerns is that we really honestly have hardly any events today.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
the whole purpose of resurfacing the Market Square was to get more people into the town and greater footfall, and that would benefit the shops and everything else. And we've not seen that investment into doing any of that. So anything that creates a barrier or an impediment, in my view, goes in the opposite direction that we want to go, we should be going along. I think secondly, you know, I understand the point about timing if you're only given 3 days, 3 weeks notice, but actually when you talk about 6 months notice for a reasonable sized event, you know, actually how draconian is it? And for me, it's about balance, and it feels to me more like a very risk-averse, you know, borough council, rather than, you know, if you're a commercial operator, I think you'd be doing something quite the opposite. You'd be trying to encourage people, and not unsafe, in an unsafe way, but I think you'd be trying to encourage more, particularly of the footfall. To me, the paper doesn't sound like an encouragement for people to come in to organise events. And the second question I've got is, I actually think, and you've referenced one of the highly experienced organisers today, you know, I think that maybe, you know, there needs to be a differentiation between those people who are highly skilled and highly professional and do this day in, day out, you know, at like a special status, versus people who are doing this as a one-off or a community group. And I think that there is a lack of recognition in this policy for those people who we need to be encouraging to be doing more, because that's a benefit to all our residents and not just to a few.
Mm.
So those would be the sort of points I would sort of challenge this paper on, and I, you know, whether it fits that bill in those two respects.
I think you quite it does look quite compelling when you look at it, and it's a big document. I tried to make that
plan.
It's 43 pages long. It's huge. What I would say is that the 6 months aren't necessarily, they're not dictated potentially by just the borough. So we have a safety advisory group, which is chaired by the county council. And that's for any big event that goes on in Staffordshire. And we, if we have a big event that comes through that it's Kate's desk, and she says, right, this is an event of a certain size, it used to be the responsible bodies group, but it has to go to the safety advisory group. And that only sits so many times a month, or it probably sits once a month. So, for example, when I led on the Commonwealth Games on Cannock Chase, the safety advisory group was meeting probably 18 months before the Commonwealth Games there, and we were meeting only twice a month to do all the health and safety and that. So there's a requirement that's not just the boroughs, it's actually what is the county councils and the safety advisory group, because on the safety advisory group you have people like the NHS, police, fire, ambulance service, ourselves, other local authorities that may be impacted. So there's quite a big group of people we have to get together. So it's not just our requirements. And again, this has been drawn up based around Martin's Law and the requirements of Martin's Law. We've all got responsibility, you as elected members, me as a paid professional officer, us as paid professional officers, have got a duty of care to make sure that the events that we put on are as safe as possible, because sadly, ultimately, if anything did happen, it'd be me that would be standing in the dock. So that's the reason why it looks a bit draconian. I get that if you will put people off. Going back to your other point about experienced providers, the experienced providers know this quite well and are quite good at it, to be honest with you, and Lorraine being one of them, she's very good, and she knows the time scales, and she will put her information in, and she will flow seamlessly through this, to be honest with you, and she does. Because that's her role. The trouble is, if you start to try and differentiate between it, you then start to bring in potential bias and things like that. So what we've done here is set out, this is our requirement.
So I think what you're saying in terms of my first point is that you built this policy based on the worst case, rather than on the best case, and actually you've made it draconian because you built it on the worst case. And in terms of the point about trying to encourage more people into the town centre, how does this policy really hit that point?
Well, what it does do, it sets out our requirements, it sets out the borough's requirements, and gives people a guide to what they need to do. The actual encouraging people in isn't really, I don't feel, the role of this document. This document is to say this is our requirements. The role of encouraging people in to do more events is through economic development and that sort of area. So that's what we'd look to do. But it's just this is to give us our base. Like, this is nothing more, as we said, just nothing more than what we've done previously. It's a little bit more because it's got the Martin's Law bit in. We haven't got it from Martin's Law because it hasn't come out, hasn't been introduced. We've put that into this document, we've put all the stuff together, so we've got it in one package.
And through you, Chair, is this a common document with County Chest?
No, not yet. What I'd like to do is adopt this at Cannock Chase, because it would be no different from what we'd be looking to adopt at Cannock Chase. This, to me, is best practice.
I mean, all right, as we all know, we live in a very unsafe world, if you like, so I can understand, you know, but I just make a plea, you know, that you do work more with the businesses and getting people more involved and try and... We've got a beautiful town, and we don't make enough of our history and things like that, you know. So anything we can do to improve, yes, you want to speak, Dean?
Yeah, I do, only because I sit on the economic development and we've just had a task and finish group, and one of the things that was set out very clearly in that is we're not here as a council to do, led by Francis. We're not here to do, we're here to enable. And this is what, this just underpins the enablement, not we're here to do, because we haven't got the money to do it.
This document is supposed to be a one little, very small cog in a very big wheel, in a big gearbox almost. You know, it just gives us a little bit of a framework. It's not the whole thing, by any stretch of the imagination. For me, this is just the health and safety requirements of the document. And I take on Kev's first point, it doesn't really do a lot to encourage events, but hopefully other areas will be encouraged events.
Yeah. And you know, it's, do you want to speak, Louise?
Just picking up from what you've just said, Dee, you mentioned that the borough doesn't have the money to do it, and yet the first thing that we're confronted with is a fee for the people who are wanting to try, and at the moment there doesn't appear to be any money anywhere. So that that's kind of the first barrier to do anything, and we really do all need to come together to stop the problems that are happening within the borough.
Do you, Chair? The fees are nominal. The fees are not big. The fees are not commercial fees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would not be able to go commercially and hire a piece of land for what we charge for our parks or Market Square.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our fees are kept low for just that reason, because we want to encourage people, we want activities and things to happen. We don't charge commercial rates for that, and I don't want to be charging commercial rates.
No.
I don't think any of us want to be charging commercial rates, because that's not what we're here at. You know,
mm-hmm.
We are a borough council. You know, we are there for our residents.
Yeah.
You know, members of the public. That's what we're designed for. All of the fees are in nominal fee, really. I mean,
But thank you for that. You know, and I think we've put our points forward. You know that we're. Don't want to put people off by somebody doing an event and reading that. I think, oh my God, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth the worry? Is it, you know, it's, that's, yes, Jill.
Thank you, Anne. I've listened to everything that
you can come to the table, don't sit there.
Can I do that? Thank you. I've listened to what everyone has said, and it's very balanced. And I think the document is excellent, and congratulations to the
company. Lots of work gone into it, I agree. And it's,
I think that if we call this draconian, which I really object to, we are in fear of having very inexperienced small groups come to put an event on that doesn't have the expertise to actually put an event on, and then we really are in trouble. In particular with Martin's Law. I've just had an organisation come to me to say that next year they are going to be organising a huge event. I immediately gave them the numbers that they should ring, and they come back to me and said, your team are amazing. And when I said my team, the Borough Council officers are incredible. The advice, the support, and these fees are, as Josh says, very reasonable. So when we have a group who have got the confidence to come forward and put an event on, and a lot of people have got it in mind, because we've got that wonderful square now in Stafford, and I think it's great that we are encouraging people, but also with this document is the guidance for them, for us to say to them, yes, it may look a little daunting, but actually this is what we have to abide by. We have to adhere to these rules. Because as you say, we sometimes have an unsafe world. In the borough, people keep saying Stafford, but it's the borough.
Mm-hmm.
We can encourage people to come to a diverse group. We've seen the Pride parade.
Yeah.
That was absolutely wonderful. So the more we can give confidence to the public that we are looking after them, that this isn't just a bit of bureaucracy, it's necessary. I think the more people we will have coming forward, and we can advertise that.
I mean, you've picked up, Jill, really, you know, about working with the people out there, you know, and bringing them in, and let's build on it. Let's, you know, it's we've got a beautiful town, we just don't make enough of it. You know, it's, yes.
Just a quick one, and this is, this document isn't the first thing they see. First thing they see is how to book it, and then this underpins that. I know because I've looked at it, because I was one of the people that needed, you know, felt the group, the other committee. So it isn't the first thing, it just underpins everything they did, and I think it's a fabulous document. It's there if they want to read it, but there is lots of guidance, and it's easy to fill that form in.
Mm-hmm.
It just says why we have to do that, and everybody has to do it anyway, and they always have. So.
Yeah, well, everybody has to have a risk assessment, don't they, in any case, when they're putting any function or anything on. So,
yeah.
And Louise and Jeremy, do you want to say anything else? You know, it's just really, you know, work with the people outside, let's use their capabilities and but, you know, yeah, we've got to keep people safe. And I appreciate the work that's gone into it, you know, that... So, yeah, I think we'll put that one to bed then, shall we?
Just for clarity then, are we saying in the minutes that we're taking no action?
No.
There are certain things...
No, we've spoken to the officers. They understand exactly how we're feeling and, you know, I think we've put our points forward. Yeah. Thank you for that. And thank you for listening. And thank you, Josh. And thank you, Jill. Right, so the item now is... 7D, the work programme. So, any comments on the work programme? Anybody want to add anything? Or I think it's. I'm a bit concerned we've not, and I understand about the food waste collection, as Josh explained to me yesterday, you know, about Craig. We need to get this task and finish again. As soon as we can, because we're coming very close to this food and waste situation. Yes, Josh.
Can I suggest that in Craig's absence, that I take on the next, probably the final meeting as a group, and talk about feedback in between this meeting and the next meeting, and then we feed back to the meeting in December.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that Marnie's not here, because she chairs those tasks and finishes, and we've not. So you've not had one since
July.
So we really need a task and finish, don't we? So
I can certainly update the obviously things have moved on with the food waste. The disposal contractor is now in place through the County Council. We are touch wood at the moment. Well, we're soon to be taking delivery of our containers will be, we're not quite sure where they're going to go yet.
Yeah.
We still haven't found a unit suitable, although we have got several irons in the fire at the moment, but that will be going somewhere. That'll be coming shortly. So, yeah, but I'm quite happy to do another task and finish group and do that face-to-face and I'll get back here on.
Thank you very much.
The last set of developments and then what's happening with the comms, because that task and finish group was set around the food waste comms that we're going in.
Yeah. Okay.
In the meantime, between now and December.
So so you're coming to the next meeting in December.
If Jack can do a magic with the councillors, and then we can go around.
Because we did some work with Newcastle, didn't we?
Andrew's very good. Andrew's excellent defence. I've been with him today. The sustainability board. I think that, you know, we need any more support than that.
Okay. So. The people that's on the task and finish, just remind me, I was on it.
Mm-hmm.
You were on it?
Marnie.
You were on it?
I can't
remember. Are you on it, Louise? Yeah? Okay. So really, we need a meeting, don't we? You need a meeting.
Yeah.
Can you send an email to Marnie and ask her to put give some dates for task and finish, please? So we can get something organised. So before the 4th of December, you know, so, yeah. Right, any other queries on the work programme? No? Everybody quite happy? Where are we all? I think I asked you the other day. Plastics, you know, it's...
That's in the work programme somewhere, isn't it?
Pardon?
It's in the work programme.
Yeah, somewhere, isn't it? Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, it's in the future.
I think...
Veolia might touch on that as well, because we've got the 4th of December, we've got the Veolia annual report coming along, and then the waste and recycling update, so we'll probably update you on type C films and plastics and things like that, and simple recycling basically. There's, at the moment, the Staffs Your Waste Partnership, and our partnership manager, Kay Book, who I think you probably know, used to be Kay Cox. Kay's working with RAP on designing a member-led piece of, well, it is basically some training for members on simple recycling, and that will be a national piece of work, so Staffordshire again are leading the way with RAP on devising something for a national rollout basically for members, so we are quite pleased with that.
Great, thank you very much for that.
We'll be using, our own scrutinies and members as guinea pigs on that.
Look forward to it.
So there's nothing else we should add on. I think we've got a big full programme, actually.
It's quite nice to see, isn't it?
Yes, it is, actually. Yeah. So I think we've had a good meeting, and I think everybody's had the questions answered. I know we probably don't always get the right answers, but, you know, we can do our best, can't we? So can I say to you, thank you very much, everybody, for attending the meeting tonight, and I look forward to seeing you on the 4th of December. And thank you, and safe.